Zach Benedict, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Now, you're all about the connection between people and places, and your Fort Wayne Landing development project certainly proves that. Congratulations.
Thank you.
When and how did this passion of yours begin?
By accident, I think, really. If you ask architects, you know, what made them want to be an architect, you usually don't get a very good answer. Most of them have been wanting to be an architect since they were 4 or 5 or 6. It's really common in the profession, in my experience. So I can't tell you why, but it was kind of this just assumed identity that never went away before I even knew what an architect really did. And then you go to school and you kind of learn what an architect kind of does. I then stuck around after school, after my accredited degree, and got another degree in urban sociology, which is kind of the study of people and places, and more because it was a personal passion that I didn't necessarily think was going to come in handy. That's not really what the profession was interested in. Then when I started working at MKM, we do a lot of work for senior living communities who design retirement communities, these life plan communities. And it's a whole industry designed around building, operating, managing micro communities. And all of that research and bookshelf after bookshelves of content, trying to understand how to make people feel more legitimized by the spaces in which they inhabit, actually came in handy. And that started to evolve. And I think shift the focus of the firm a little in trying to make sure we understood just how people and places intersect. So the firm really tries to make sure we only work on projects we think can enhance community health and well-being. So without that mission, I don't know if it makes sense for us to be the lead designer for the landing, but understanding how important that project could be in developing a sustainable intergenerational neighborhood. Beautiful. One failed project, right? I mean, you don't get that chance very often. Just became a really, we thought, a perfect opportunity to really explore and test some of those ideas. So that's kind of how that evolved into us, I think, being a good fit for that project.
What a wonderful evolution, and my, how you've really put it to good use. So now that we know perhaps the motivation for them, just how do your ideas evolve from plan to reality?
I mean, the thing about projects of that size is that there's this assumption that they go smoothly. And they don't. I think the best narrative description I've ever heard is it's more like linear chaos. You know, it's kind of all over the place, but as long as we're moving forward, we're doing something right. So in a project like that, overnight, the funding mechanisms can change, the user groups can change, the budget can change. You know, one day it was 6 buildings, the next day it was 7. When I started the project, we weren't going to build a new building. It was just renovations. You know, and then through the design process, we said, no, I think we can fit this within the scope of the project. And it became also an additional new building on the landing. So the project is always evolving around. You're seeing that with Electric Works, too. I mean, these things are linear chaos. It's just a question of how well can you manage that chaos and keep some sense of sanity about you, that we understand what the mission and the goals of the project are and keep it within those limits. And that, to me, is the challenge about these projects. Isn't necessarily that they're on budget, you know, on time, you know, that kind of thing. Buildings aren't going to fall down. Like, we'll get that part right. The question is, can we do that and still not lose sight of why we wanted to do the project in the first place? And that's always the challenge.
And a noble goal that you have, and it sounds like you're successful because you have, number one, the motivation, and number two, the attention to details. Now, interestingly, a refurb and redevelopment, if you will, like you're doing in the landing, then involves working with old buildings. I think new buildings, as you said. So really, every kind of challenge, it might make everything more complicated, but does that quite directly sweeten the success that you feel when you do make it all work together?
Personally, I think architects as a species of human gravitate towards story problems. That's the kind of person I think most good architects are. We like complicated story problems, not necessarily math, not necessarily an essay assignment, but somewhere in between where we're juggling social economic realities and the objectivity of math and science. I think the complexity of the landing, just strictly structurally, was at one level of complexity. You know, there's different building types. Some of those buildings actually are built out of wood, and others are concrete. They're very different from that standpoint, but not necessarily complicated. Where I think the landing was interesting is it's the oldest historic district in northern Indiana. And you can't, I think, attack or approach that project without having some sensitivity to the cultural history of that space and trying to at least understand how this project is going to play in the linear history of that as a place for people to use for generations to come. So To me, that's a little bit more of an interesting and admittedly more complicated problem, because there's not necessarily a right answer to that one. You know, if the building falls down, I can tell you we got it wrong. that's easier to say whether or not we did it right. But when it comes to things like placemaking, cultural sensitivity, the heritage of a place, you can have some educated discussions around why you think what we're doing is appropriate or the best, but it's much harder to acknowledge the day it opens that we got it right, because you almost in some way have to see how people use it to see whether or not your thesis was correct. People ask me, what's the most interesting thing about the landing? When we interviewed for that job, they asked me as the design person on the team, what to you is the biggest challenge of the landing? And I said, to make sure that when we're done, we didn't lose sight, to make sure we reserved enough space for a good snowball fight. That's the kind of things that get lost in a project of this size, is no one's going to interrupt a budget meeting to say, you know, yeah, but I need about 50 square feet for a bunker for a snowball fight, because people are going to live here and play here. And I don't want that to just get off everybody's radar and we'll figure it out later. That's a critical part of this. If we're going to say this is a place where people are going to call home, and you don't know if you do that right until after it's occupied, which is almost too late to do anything about it. And that's, I think, the stress and the excitement of it, is you're going to have to sit back and watch it get occupied and used and evolve before you can even tell if you got it even close to being an appropriate response from the design side.
And it does bring the results that you want totally up close and personal, which sounds like the way you like to roll. And that's
correct.
Fantastic, yeah. Certainly for our city. Now, there are always challenges, and projects are unique, including that one. You also had the unprecedented obstacle of pandemic to factor in, and who knew?
Yeah.
Something you didn't learn in architecture school, necessarily. So what did this do to things as you kept going?
I think some of the restaurateurs probably can speak to this with a little bit more urgency than I can. In some ways, the pandemic could have been more detrimental to the project if it would have happened later, because we actually stalled the opening of a couple of the tenants because of the pandemic. If we would have got up and running and they would have staffed up and then everything shut down, that would have been, I would argue, you know, it wasn't my restaurant, but I would argue that would have been a lot harder to deal with than stalling the opening of some of the restaurants. So if anything, my take on it relative to the landing is it kind of stalled the finish line. So it took a little wind out of everybody's sail, because we knew it was done, but now we can't open it. So we just kind of had to sit there and stare at it. But I think it could have been a lot harder on some of the occupants if it came later and we were already knee deep in running restaurants and businesses.
Meanwhile, what has that, and now knowing that pandemics are in our reality, taught you about your craft?
This is a tough one. Yeah, you're right. They don't cover pandemics in school. I have been on a soapbox for 10 years now talking about the importance of social capital and community development. And there's a lot of really good research illustrating the tangible value of social connections and their impact on longevity, living longer lives. And I really do think camaraderie is as close to a fountain of youth as we can find from a spatial standpoint, which really turns every idea you have on its head when you tell people they can't be around each other. I think the biggest benefit of this pandemic, and maybe 2020 in general, is that I hope it elevates an awareness and appreciation for people, the community, and the contributions that they so willingly provided before we were told we couldn't be around each other. And that sense of loneliness and missing the interaction and knowing that it's not quite the same over Zoom or on the phone or through a text message is just not the same. We knew that in the scientific community, but now I think the general population understands that that's not the same. Facebook will never replace meeting someone on the sidewalk and giving a quick hug and a pat on the back and walking away. And now that that has been taken away from us for such a long period of time, really, my hope is that it has made that more of an appreciated asset to any community, whether you're picking where to live, where to work, how to design a neighborhood, that that becomes now the new currency and something that will get better, I think. I've heard pandemic proofing as a phrase now. I think we'll get better at trying to understand what that means. I don't think that's going to remove this fear of being isolated. I don't think they're going to be the same solution.
Is it fairly safe to say that you and folks like you around the world are going to work harder to make sure that everything's as together as possible?
Yeah. And I think, you know, before the pandemic, and it's a small circle, but, you know, when I'm given a keynote in Iowa about aging in place and loneliness, you're preaching to the choir. Usually people that want to attend those discussions already value the need for that. What this, I think, did is it moved this epidemic of loneliness discussion, which in some circles we've been talking about for a couple of years, now to the forefront. And the pandemic has now become a testbed of really speeding up the awareness of what that really can do to someone in terms of likelihood of developing dementia, domestic violence. There's a whole litany of things that are a byproduct of us not being around other humans. And I think now that that has been seen by a much wider audience, it's much more of an approachable topic when we are now talking seriously about economic development, which it wouldn't have been a year ago.
Timing then. Finally, it's here. And also, the world is thankful for people like you and companies like yours who will devote their life's work to it. As regards that lifetime community movement and focusing on the socioeconomic benefits of all of that, Zach, how does that factor into Benedict's view going forward? And what do you already see it could mean?
I think the biggest challenge we probably have right now, at least in the architectural design planning community, is having to reconcile a desire to provide solutions for a user group that I don't think we as a profession understand that well. And the example I'll give is a botanist knows a lot about a school of fish. An architect should know a lot about a neighborhood of people. And to me, we don't as a profession. And that's a problem. That's a real problem. For so long, it was seen more as this collision between art and science, architecture was. And to me, it's more about structure and culture. You have to know something about how humans behave in a space. If you're going to say with a straight face, this is going to improve or complicate a certain scenario. So when you're looking at the landing, I have to be able to tell you with some confidence, well, this has to look like this if we want people to behave this way. If we want them to do something else, then it has to look different. But you need to understand how those physical restrictions in that built environment change, nudge, or compromise our behavior. A silly example, we're what they call a thigomycetaxis. We're a wall-hugging species. So even when you open up the street like the landing, right, when that street's open and there's no vehicular traffic, there's very few individuals feeling comfortable walking right down the middle of the old street. You're going to hug that building, not because you fear anything, but you're biologically engineered. You're evolved in a way that you think that's the safest path, whether or not you think about it consciously or not. Understanding that is important. And there's a whole bunch of different things that architects and planners need to better understand in terms of how people behave. And I think what the pandemic has taught us is that every single fear we had of the negative side effects of loneliness were not only true, but we were probably underselling them. And we got to get better understanding how to create what they call bridged and bond relationships between people from a built environment standpoint. How can we help serve as a platform so that people don't have to rely on Facebook for friends?
Do you feel like you have a natural or almost innate, certainly developed at any rate, gift of being able to see that and then translate it architecturally into a user-friendly, all-ages living space?
I do think I can remember the moment I made a promise to myself that I needed to know more about this. I do remember saying to myself, I don't like the way this feels, that I can't answer these questions with any confidence. Here I've been charged with helping design a community. I can make it look good aesthetically. That's the easy part. But with a straight face, can I tell you that this is going to increase someone's willingness to say hi to someone? At that time, the answer was no. I don't know what that even looks like. And to me, that was the failure of the profession in a lot of ways, or at least my exposure at the time to the profession. And that never went away, that feeling of not guilt, but awareness that I was probably more ignorant in some of these categories than I like to be. I like the quote Charlie Munger says, it's not a circle of competency if you don't know the limits of it. And I think too often architects think, well, everything falls under architecture. And I can say, well, no, there are certain things that I have friends that are a lot more versed in what that is. But I do firmly believe that human behavior falls within the limits of an architect's level of competency. They should understand how that works. And at the time, I knew nothing about it in that way, objectively. So we've spent a lot of time trying to get better at understanding that. And that, to me, has been a conscious effort. I don't know if it's a gift, but as much a challenge to ourselves that we're not going to let ourselves off the hook here. Even when clients don't care and don't want us to talk about it, we're still arguing about it in my office. You know, you're not doing this right because you're avoiding or ignoring this set of research or this criteria. And to me, that becomes now the definition of what good design looks like, is it starts to move that needle forward and tell that story in a way that we're learning something along the way. And it's not an exact science, but there's more science to it than we had ever given credit to. Retirement communities, you can pick on those. They're an outgrowth of poorly planned communities in the first place. You know, aging wasn't a problem for a millennia. It only recently became a problem. And it was partly responsible for the communities that we were designing and planning and developing as an industry. So if we can cause those problems with us being thoughtless, I don't know why we can't improve those conditions by being a little bit more thoughtful. That's something we're extremely passionate about and we spend a lot of time thinking about.
And so, Zach, what's up now on your drawing board?
A lot of things, really. I mean, we don't do a lot of work in Allen County. The majority of our work's throughout the Midwest. We do a lot of community health projects, but also do a lot of pro bono work, research in-house. So we're working on things ranging from Arch United's trying to think through their campus. We're trying to help them with that, too. I do as many public libraries as I can help. It's kind of a passion of mine because I think they're the bookend to this discussion of community health and well-being. So I'm also doing a lot of public library work, working in different communities, trying to understand what the relevance of that building type is throughout Indiana.
Then it sounds like you have a job as well as job well done security, if you keep up the good work.
That's the hope, yeah.
And well, Zach, you are an innovative planner, builder, and community connector. But maybe above all, you are a grassroots storyteller. So last question, from your heart, what story do you most want the Fort Wayne Landing Restoration to tell about you as well as the community we live in?
The reason that I'm so proud of the landing is because I think it was a perfect example to show not only our community, but the region, that quality and sustainable economic development is where people and places overlap and can be there across all ages and abilities. And to try to understand that from a historical context and allowing the landing to retain that identity that it had for so many years into the future as the place where that innovation is happening and that identity is protected, I think is something really to be proud of.
Fort Wayne resident Zach Benedict is principal at MKM Architecture and Design and lead architect of the Landing Development Project. Zach, thanks for the connections and build and the stories they tell. Do carry the gift.
Thank you so much.